Hi, all. Welcome to Conning's Context Podcast for the second quarter of 2020. I'm Rich Sega. Joining me today are two of my colleagues, Matt Daly, Managing Director and Head of Corporate and Credit Municipal Teams, Paul Norris, Director, Managing Director and Head of Structured Products. Our economy and that of the world are in shambles. We know that, and we hear it every day. So rather than dwell on the dismal readings of the recent past, today we'll take a look at the near future in hopes of finding soon a few rays of light breaking through some of these very dense clouds. And there's good reason to hope, because this recession is not caused by any of the usual suspects like financial excesses, central bank policy errors, or tight energy markets. It's a virus, and it will pass, so we look past it. We at Conning are doing all we can to help you navigate through these events and keep your portfolios and your business on track toward your long-term goals. The demand destruction from the virus and the severe policy response to it has been enormous and continues to this day. The shutdown and the shelter-in-place orders were prudent first reactions to what appeared to be the catastrophic potential of the disease. They helped to slow the early spread, avoided overwhelming our healthcare systems, though that's happened in some places, Italy being one of the most prominent. But these actions are fast becoming more and more costly in human suffering by the day. The economic shutdown is our attempt to stop the damage from the virus. Let's look at what we've been trying to do to stop the damage from the shutdown. First, let's consider monetary policy and the actions of central banks. Many aspects of this global tragedy have been called unprecedented. One that truly deserves that term is the degree of quantitative easing. The ECB has a new 50 billion euro emergency purchase program. In Tokyo, BOJ is targeting 12 trillion yen in stock purchases. The Bank of England went straight to financing government spending without even bothering with it. Focusing on the U.S. policy response, the Fed's balance sheet has exploded to over $5 trillion. There are loans, guarantees, credit facilities to help business, especially small business, through this. The Main Street lending facility is especially important to keep small businesses intact so they can maintain staff and rehire when the restrictions are lifted. Interest rates are effectively zero, so there's a renewed threat that they'll fall below that. Quantitative easing is a major cause of negative rates, and since the U.S. Central Bank has ended QE in 2014, there was very little risk of negative interest rate policy, NERP, here now. But now we can't continue to rely on that. We hope the Fed respects the miserable history of NERP's failures and avoids that mistake. On the fiscal side, the payroll support plan to help keep furloughed workers employed is vital. On the other hand, while distributing cash to families is a popular political gesture, it does very little to stimulate anything, as this is quickly becoming a supply-side problem. Supply chains don't start at Amazon and Walmart. People that build all those things they sell are largely idle now. People have to get back to work. That means there must be jobs to go back to and companies to employ them, without all the economic disincentives to returning to work that these government handouts can cause. Of course, the ultimate cause of all this is the viral infections, which have peaked globally and are approaching peak in the U.S. Despite the fact that the early models for the spread and lethality were and continue to be spectacularly wrong and continually revised, there's a large amount of residual fear based on them, which will make it tough to envision getting back to full stride right away. The key will be when we have an effective therapy and testing capability so we can tell people that, one, most of you won't get this, and two, if you do get it, chances are you won't even know it, or maybe your symptoms will be slight, and three, if you do have symptoms, we have a treatment so you won't die. Until we get there, the panic won't ease. And speaking of panic, the market reaction to all of this initially was full-blown panic, which seems to have subsided some in stocks, but bonds are still more wary. Let me bring in my colleagues, Matt and Paul, to broaden this discussion to what's going on in two vital areas of investment, corporate credit and structured products. Matt, let's start with you. How have the policy responses to the virus been received by the credit markets?
So in terms of the corporate market, I'd say policy response has been very well received. The market experienced tremendous widening in spreads starting in late February, and this was continuing right into March, as it became clear the economic damage related to social distancing and hopes to flatten the curve was going to be very severe. spreads hit their peak wide levels on March 23rd, and that just happens to be the date that the Fed announced the expansion of their toolkit. Specific to the corporate market, they announced two programs, primary and secondary corporate credit facilities. We've experienced a dramatic snapback in spreads since then. We're certainly not all the way back, but we've retraced almost 60%. Now, both of these facilities focus on the shorter end of the market, where there was significant liquidity stress. Just the announcement of these facilities, and they won't actually be operational for probably several more weeks, effectively backstop the corporate market. This has helped unclog the issuance pipeline and reduce borrowing costs. These facilities also allow the purchase of bonds of certain fallen angels. These are corporates that have been downgraded from investment grade to below investment grade as a result of the virus. This is really important because there's been such huge growth in the BBB rated part of the market over the past number of years. As the credit cycle quickly rotated into what we call the decline phase, there's been a lot of rating downgrades to high yield, and more are expected. So the Fed's support of fallen angels that meet their eligibility criteria, that's going to help facilitate the transition process.
Thanks, Matt. So Paul, since so much of the support for structured assets comes from small business and individuals, either through the housing markets, commercial real estate, and bank lending, what's your take on the effects of these programs in your markets?
Well, Rich, as Matt had mentioned, the Fed stepped in a very aggressive way on March 23rd, and to support many of the individuals that you mentioned, as well as companies. The first thing that I would throw out there is that the Fed started buying agency mortgage-backed securities to really support homeowners in terms of helping them lower their payments by refinancing their mortgages. During the crisis, spreads had widened approximately 125 basis points in terms of OAS. So we had gone to unseen levels since the great financial crisis, where agency mortgages were trading at an OAS level of 125 to 150. After the Fed came into the market, spreads within the next few trading days tightened almost 100 basis points to where, generally speaking, OASs had reverted back to around a 10 OAS. So the Fed is trying to do their part to help homeowners be able to refinance and move into cheaper mortgages. The other program that they announced that has had a material impact, even though it has not been formally up and running yet, is the TALF program. The TALF program, that's an acronym, T-A-L-F, stands for the Term Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facility. And basically, long story short there, the Fed will buy issuance out of this TALF program and support those consumer issuers like Ford or GM who may need to securitize loans that are on their balance sheet so that they can continue making auto loans to consumers. And really, the TALF announcement has subdivided our market into two pieces, those that are included in the TALF program. And from there, as Matt mentioned, on March 23rd, we saw spreads tighten on average 300 basis points for each of the asset classes that are included in the TALF program. And so it's had a tremendous effect on the market and restarted liquidity in our market so that consumer-related companies can begin issuing asset-backed securities again.
Well, it's sure. With respect to liquidity and the need to get the markets, the credit flows going again, the Fed has stepped in and done a great job. But it's always troubled me when they enter the market and prop up prices and assets, and it takes some of the information away from investors. Where do you gentlemen see the opportunities, given the dramatic repricing in the markets in the last few weeks? Matt, we'll start with corporate credit first.
So it's important to remember, although valuations, they've improved, we're still facing a really weak economic backdrop, and this is likely to persist for some time, even as the economy reopens. So this means for corporate credit, our base case is for those credit profiles to deteriorate as earnings decline going forward. And this is especially true for those areas that are more economically sensitive or for issuers that came into this downturn with leverage that was too high, or those companies that are more affected by social distancing policies. So I'm thinking of areas like independents and oil field service in the energy complex. Some of the discretionary consumer spending areas like automotive or travel-related industries, even mall-based department stores and retail-oriented REITs. So we do believe, though, that there's plenty of opportunities right now. Foremost in this environment, though, is the need for rigorous fundamental analysis to ensure issuers can maintain credit profiles and will have at least somewhat insulated cash flows during a period of economic weakness. We're starting to see companies take some aggressive action to defend their credit profiles. This is things like reducing capital spending, expense cuts, curbing share repurchases, and this is all certainly positive from a credit perspective. We think issuers in less cyclical areas like consumer products or large cap mass merchandise retailers are well positioned here. These are the companies that are actually going to benefit from consumers staying close to home. We also find value in issuers in more fundamentally insulated areas like communications and utilities right now. The new issue market has been incredibly busy, so we continue to have great opportunity to purchase these types of names at attractive levels. Many of these issuers are traditionally hard to source or were previously at very tight spread levels. And the last thing I'm going to mention, credit curves were flat or inverted in March as liquidity became more constrained. We're now seeing more normalization following the Fed's intervention, but this normalization's been slow, so there continues to be opportunity across credit curves of issuers, but here security selection is absolute key.
So, Paul, the structured product sector is so varied that I'm sure things are affected very differently in different parts of the market. And our clients expect to find any attractive alternatives in the structured product areas these days?
Certainly, Rich. You know, one thing that Matt just mentioned that I think is I'll start off with is that security selection is obviously very important. And that's always been important for us, but I think it's even more important today. As I mentioned before, I think we can subdivide our market into two segments, those asset classes that are included in TALF and those asset classes that are not. And one of those asset classes that are not eligible at this point for TALF is residential mortgage-backed securities. And we think that many of those AAA assets are very attractive. And one of the reasons that we think they're attractive is because when we run our stress tests both for COVID-19 and also for the Great Financial Crisis, these securities are money good. They don't have any interest payment shortfalls or any principal losses. And so because they were not included in TALF, their spread tightening afterwards lagged that of their other counterparts.
So what I would say is, as an example, for AAA non-agency mortgage securities, you can earn a yield anywhere between 3% to 4%. We think this is particularly attractive, especially given agency mortgages only offer a yield of about 1%.
One of the other sectors that we think is attractive that is actually included in the TALF program, but its spreads have not tightened as much as other competing assets like prime auto, is subprime auto asset-backed securities. That sector, along with equipment, offers yields around 2% to 3%, depending on the issuer and the particular collateral. And those are, again, for AAA securities. Finally, one thing I'd like to mention is that we are really enthused about opportunities in seasoned AAA deals for a couple reasons. One, seasoned deals in our structured product space typically see credit enhancement increase. So what may have been a normal AA or a normal AAA has seen credit enhancement increase a tremendous amount, which means it's even safer. And then particularly for our residential mortgage-backed securities, seasoning likely means that home price appreciation has really positively impacted the deal. So where the LTV at issuance might have been around 70 or 80% for that particular security, with home prices up over the past 10 years or even the last 5 years, many of these deals' LTVs are now in the 50s or 60s, which gives us plenty of room for error.
Thank you both, gentlemen, for your insights in these distressing and unprecedented times. Polling suggests that we'll see a slow emergence once the restrictions are lifted. There will continue to be erratic market reactions to new outbreaks, particularly in emerging markets, but even in developed societies where secondary outbreaks will occur as the gradual phase-out of shutdowns is implemented. The economy can work well again, just as it had until halfway through the first quarter. The fundamentals are constructive, but as evidenced by the stunning collapse in oil demand, much damage has already been done. We need to get back to work so we don't do any more. That concludes our Conning Context podcast for the second quarter, 2020. We hope this information is helpful, and we always welcome your feedback and questions. You can let us know your thoughts through your relationship manager, your portfolio manager, or send them directly to us at context, that's conning.com. Thanks for listening to Conning Context, and be well.